Community Connections, CKMS. Local sounds, thoughts, passions, and success. Celebrate local, your neighbor's got a story to tell. Community Connections, CKMS.
Happy Monday, Waterloo Region. You're listening to CKMS Community Connections on CKMS FM Radio Waterloo 102.7. Today is Monday, September the 18th. Still 3 days to go in summer, but it sure doesn't feel like it. I'm already wearing my felt hat. Supposed to have David Walton in the studio today to talk about the Lived Expertise Working Group. I'm going to start off with a bit of music from Jay Linden from Cambridge. This is Simcoe Mud.
Simcoe mud is a soft light brown. Rise from the ashes when the rain falls down. One good soaking and the world gets stuck. Can't cart tires to a mid-sized truck. Up to my ankles in Simcoe mud. Late last summer was a terrible fight. Guns were drawn on a Wednesday night. Something about the foreman. Street goodnight.
Mississippi mud.
Nothing quite so good for cooling the blood as a little bit of Mississippi mud. We've got David Alton in the studio. Welcome, David.
Howdy, folks.
David is with the Levd Expertise Working Group.
Yes.
Which works out of the Social Development Center.
Yes, yes. It's a wonderful privilege.
Yeah. Tell me about the Levd Expertise Working Group. What is the purpose of LEWG, L-E-W-G?
Yeah, so for folks who have been following the City of Kitchener's housing policy for a while, you might remember that the city created the Housing for All strategy. And in that process of trying to figure out an affordable housing strategy, they were trying to talk to people who've experienced poverty, housing marginalization, homelessness. And they did a very bad job. But they learned from it. And so they were like, we need to do something different. The Social Development Center, who's been doing this work for a long time, has been like, we're here to help you do something different. And so together, the two groups kind of started talking about how to engage people with lived experiences of homelessness, of poverty, of housing marginalization better, and made it actually a recommendation in the affordable housing strategy that this group be created for a 2-year pilot project.
Okay.
So it's 12 folks with housing marginalization experience and advocacy experience. That's why we call them lived experts.
Okay.
And they've been coming together to help the city talk about housing and homelessness.
I was wondering what the difference was between a lived expertise working group and a lived experience working group.
I think everything of this is iterative. You know, these systems and people who've been marginalized by these systems are constantly in negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea of lived expertise was, one, to acknowledge the vast wealth of wisdom and experience that comes from experiencing housing marginalization and like the nuances of that wisdom that come from living it. And also so that institutions can actually start recognizing that seriously, both the experience as being valuable and worthy of being treated the same as a professor or a developer,
okay,
but also the advocacy experience is also very valuable, and to have the regions understand the value of advocacy experience.
Right, right. And how has it been working out? Has the City of Kitchener accepted the recommendations of the Lived Expertise Working Group?
It's definitely, we're having this interview in a very interesting time. We submitted our year one report in June. And council,
this has been going on for more than a year now, though.
Yes, we started in January of 2022.
Ah.
Well, I guess I started in January. The group started in May of 2022.
Okay.
And so we submitted our year one report in June. Some counselors had some questions. I know the City of Kitchener has been navigating several complicated files related to housing and homelessness. And so we've been having some more in-depth conversations with us this summer, and we're going back next week, next Monday, to resubmit the report and be like, we're ready to go for a second year. So hopefully it'll be a smooth sailing from there on.
Okay. What's involved in submitting a report?
Well, because the city has lots of different departments, and affordable housing, even though City Commissioner touches on it a lot, they didn't have clear, there's not like a clear, like, this is the affordable housing department, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have people who are responding to homelessness directly, like bylaw. We have people who are crafting policies, like planning. We have equity folks. So the region, the city, we were bouncing around within the city for a while, and now we're with the planning department. And so a lot of what we're doing now is talking to the planning department about, okay, what does it mean for you to actually meaningfully engage people with lived expertise? But also, like, what's in your portfolio? Like, let's actually talk about what's on the table and what are some meaningful projects we can work on for the coming year. And so we have a nice, shiny little list. We'll be submitting to council next Monday, and are excited to get started on those projects.
So this is a delegation to council at the city, at the Kitchener Council meeting.
Yeah, well, it's going to come, like, because we're working with the planning department, it's going to be a staff report to council, we'll be there cheering along because we've worked hard to get to this level of alignment. But folks who are passionate about the Lived Expertise Working Group are more than welcome to delegate if they want.
Right, right. I thought that housing was more of a region of Waterloo municipal issue rather than a City of Kitchener issue?
I mean,
or area of responsibility, better said.
Definitely, like the region is the service system manager, so they're the ones who are funding all the agencies, right? But as I said, the city has so many portfolios that directly touch upon homelessness and housing insecurity. I mean, planning, for example, which we're working with, they frame the rules that developers have to play by. So those rules can make an impact on affordability. They shape out the visions for growth and the kind of the key policy themes that everyone in the city and all land in the city has to abide by. So those are some pretty big influences. And then there's like the direct impact, right? Like when you set up, when there's an encampment in a park, it is the Parks Department and the Bylaw Department, both are city's departments, that are the ones who are doing that direct relationship. Right. How do we relate better? So there's a lot of different ways that cities, well, they're not the service system manager. They're not getting, they're not as, like, recognized by the region, I mean, by the province to do that work. The city still has so many tools that are very important for affordability and for homelessness support, and also like can't avoid it. Like it becomes, it's in their terrain and it is in their domain to work on something.
Okay. And since you're just concentrating on the City of Kitchener at the moment, will this advocacy be happening in other municipalities, City of Waterloo, City of Cambridge?
Well, I think something we've seen because of the work of this, like, I mean, you wouldn't be able to find this written down in any kind of evidence, but from my experience doing this work, you can see a direct correlation between the work that the Lived Expertise Working Group has been doing with the City of Kitchener and the work that and the way the region has been thinking about the planned and chronic homelessness. It's why the Social Development Center is participating in that process. That wouldn't, like, the Social Development Center wouldn't be a part of the planned and chronic homelessness if the Lived Expertise Working Group hadn't been already foraging what does it look like to do this kind of work more meaningfully with the city. Okay. So we can definitely see the impact already on another municipality.
Well, that's excellent. So there's some hope that this model will be adopted in other municipalities, even if your Lived Expertise Working Group isn't the one spearheading it.
Well, definitely the, like, lived experience and lived expertise are being really recognized by level governments across the country, that are, these are things that are needed so that we can actually have responsive, compassionate policies.
Okay.
And so it's like, this is where the direction we're heading. We're in a 2-year pilot project, so we'll see where we're at the end of June, but we're like, we're hoping to submit more recommendations to the City of Kitchener and ultimately to the rest of the municipalities locally about how to be thinking about how to keep moving forward with this work.
Right. When you've got some traction within the City of Kitchener and the City of Kitchener has adopted your policies or your recommendations, what's left for you to do after that?
Something that is really, I've learned so much through this process is that, you know, there's the whole institutional domain, you know, how do we help the region, the city, even agencies actually see what's happening and see how their actions impact. There's so much work there. But the biggest work is actually helping all the mutual aid and community supports that are like unsheltered communities are communities and they're vital communities that are keeping people alive. And so a whole part of our work is validating that work, helping those people collaborate better, help those people communicate with all these institutions better. But that's such a huge part. And so that's always going to be ongoing, right? Helping the lived expertise that is emerging from our community all the time, from all the different mountain shelter communities, there are people who are, I mean, they are experiencing very difficult things and they're finding ways to work together to get through it. And then they're trying to find ways to turn that into a voice to the municipalities and other institutions.
Right. A lot of these mutual aid groups that have sprung up are generally unrecognized, aren't they? They're not funded by any municipal body. They're not officially recognized. They don't have a charity number. I'm thinking of things like the community fridge or the mutual aid group that's on Facebook. They're just not officially recognized. And is Lived Expertise Group helping make this more visible to municipalities?
I mean, we are creating a huge, like, a bridge, and like this idea of bridge, the value of bridges, being able to bridge between these different spaces. One of the, if you look at the planned and chronic homelessness right now, they are looking at how do we better engage with mutual aid groups that are unrecognized. Those groups arise because everyday people either experience gaps themselves and are trying to respond, or see gaps and then they try and respond. And it's really interesting. Like, if you remember the encampment that was on Ruse Island in Victoria Park.
Mm-hmm.
There was no formal support for that encampment for a long while. So it was just City of Kitchener Bylaw who was the only one responding. And then it was the mutual aid groups like Fight Pack, like the Allan Ryan's People's Brigade, who were making that, making sure those people had the care that they need. And over time, then we saw the connection between those groups and other bodies that allowed for those people to have more support. So I think by creating these bridges and these spaces for these voices to be recognized, it helps the whole system see what's actually happening and start recognizing all the gap fillers, all the bridge makers that are in the community. And so we're very hopeful that as we continue doing this work, that we're going to have a more and more of a culture that really sees the value of all these groups and actually make sure that they're connected, that they're supported, and that they're not facing barriers and criminalization.
Mm-hmm. You said that City of Kitchener Bylaw was the only group providing any sort of assistance to the people on Rosanna. That's very kind. I didn't see it that way myself from the outside looking in.
Well, bylaw has a very difficult role, right? Like, they are there to respond to complaints,
mm-hmm.
and they are fundamentally a criminalizing body. Like, they are there to respond to a client complaint and use the law to criminalize. But the City of Kitchener, like, as part of it, has been trying to adopt a human rights-based approach. And so their bylaw officers were then forced into this position of part caregiver, part criminalizing. It created a whole other layer of issues. And this is why, you know, it's very important that you can't just have, like, you also need to have recognized the other groups, because there were mm-hmm. mutual aid groups, there were Fight Back, there were mm-hmm. Allan Ryan People's Brigade, there were people on the ground doing stuff, but they weren't able to be recognized, and there wasn't able to be that collaboration that needs right. to happen. But I believe that we are moving in the direction that is very possible. And I have great empathy for bylaw, despite all the messiness that comes from it, because it is
yeah.
really it's an impossible task. And this is something that's actually throughout the system. We have people who want to care for people experiencing homelessness, but the system also is so attached to so many misconceptions and ideas about homeless people that need to be controlled, they need to be contained, they need to have their impact reined in, and that forces people who want to care into a position where they have to criminalize. And that's where we have a lot of tension everywhere, whether it's in agencies or at bylaw. It's this tension between care and criminalization. And that's my big message to every institution I work with. Let's find ways to remove the barriers to care. Like, what if we had the city had staff that were there just to care? Okay. They didn't have to have that stress of criminalizing at the same time.
Okay. It does seem like Kitchener was ahead of the curve on that, because I hear other municipalities that are actually making it illegal to provide mutual aid to people who are
We have seen house. Several municipalities do that, and we really want to make sure we are ahead of the curve in helping the municipalities understand. We see the tensions you're holding. Like, it's not an easy position to be a municipality right now, but by collaborating with this immense sea of actors who are trying to provide care, we can actually make it easier on everyone, make it care more possible by removing criminalization. But yeah. to do that, you have to address the fears and insecurities and all those pressures, and they're very real pressures.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really good news part of the story. So I'm happy to hear that, because, you know, news has been pretty depressing lately. So it's nice to hear that there's some positive outcomes to the work that you've been doing, the work that other groups have been doing, and that it's being recognized.
I mean, just to give you here, this is my positive story of the week. So last week, the Social Development Center was presenting with the region about the Planned End Chronic Homelessness in Council. And at the same time, a whole group of local organizations were advocating for a bylaw to address hate speech and harassment on regional property.
Mm.
And because those two things were happening at the same time, some counselors saw the connection between the two and amended the hate and harassment bylaw to include income status and housing status. So This is the first time in the municipality where the region is now recognizing that people who are experiencing homelessness, people who are experiencing poverty, one, have to deal, like, are dealing right now with hate speech and harassment. There are mm-hmm. many threats, both at 100 Victoria or at even the New Herbs Road kind of hybrid shelter. There are severe threats to people's safety. And now the region has a bylaw that can help recognize that stuff is a problem, and that the region should be addressing that. The region should be intervening in a way to mitigate against hate speech and harassment. So to me, that is a huge victory to see that now we have some recognition that homeless people are deserving of protection from hate speech and harassment by the region itself.
It is. That's excellent. It's good to hear that the regional councillors are advocating for all the citizens at this point.
Yeah, I was very proud to be a resident of this region. Yeah.
Okay, I think we're going to take a little bit of a break, let you get your breath for real this time. I'm going to play a little bit of music by Courtney Wolf, her new single called Can You See Me? Courtney Wolf, Can You See Me? The new punk genre, Courtney Wolf, a little bit different from her past folk music genre. Got David Alton from the Lived Expertise Working Group in the studio, who is about to present a report to Kitchener Council. So David, what's in the report?
Yeah, so the report is interesting. As I mentioned, we've been kind of in conversations with the planning department and other parts of the city to really drill down in the specifics of what does it mean to do this work moving forward, and also where is the meaningful projects. And so we kind of have worked together to create what we're calling a charter that kind of outlines, you know, what does it mean to work with lived expertise. So we have a list of principles, for example, here that talk about the importance of including lived expertise throughout the process. So rather than just, you know, one consultation at one moment, it's having us, having the lived experts be able to work with staff in both the planning of the project, then the kind of, and then the implementation of the project, and even in the evaluation. So we have some projects with the planning department that we think we're going to be able to see that kind of life through the lifespan of the project, lived expertise really informing that each step of the way, which is very exciting. Okay.
And this will be an ongoing thing then, is the hope that even after the end of the 2-year pilot, this becomes a permanent fixture within the city's planning framework.
I mean, as we've talked with people in this, like, the city doesn't have any kind of lived experience process advising them formally, and other than this group.
Right.
And so that's one of the reasons why the pilot was created, because the city recognized that it needed to do better. And that this kind of engagement, long form, has immense value. And so obviously we are not the politicians who are going to be voting in next June, you know, whether this pilot project is transformed, but we're going to be giving them a set of recommendations at that time about what that looks like. And it'll likely have a lot of similarities to what the group has done. Like, I think we in the planning department are hopeful that this group will be a longstanding pillar of engagement within the city of Kitchener. But that's where the public and that's where councillors right. have a very strong say in taking our recommendations and turning it into whatever is next.
Right. The people in the Lived Experience Working Group are doing a fair bit of work yes. to make this happen.
Yeah.
Are they being compensated?
Yeah, so that's part of the idea of expertise is that, you know, they should be paid like experts are paid.
Yes.
And so we have a whole series of kind of both, we have stipends for the actual work, but then we also have childcare stipends for the people who have children. We have transportation stipends for people's mobility things. And this is where the lived experience groups across the country, I just met with a bunch of them and we were all like comparing our rates because we want to be really modeling for municipalities and governments across the country. Like, this is how you do it fairly. This is how you do it professionally, like in a way yeah. that this is a type of profession that comes from years of advocacy and working through these systems. And so we really want to recognize that.
I think that's not or hasn't been commonly done in the past. There's been people who've been making delegations to councils yeah. and municipalities and then being asked to sit in on various planning meetings and committees and whatnot, but never actually being recognized for the expertise and certainly never being compensated for the expertise, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that in this particular case, this particular working group, people are already at capacity, I think, and then to ask them to do additional work in a lived expertise group without compensation is possibly more than what a lot of people are able to handle, you know. Don't have the spoons, as the saying goes.
Yeah, very much. There's, and this is one of the reasons, like, why, like, this is it's deep policy work, but it's also deeply human work. You know, we have to have our meetings be responsive to the immense burnout and realities that people are experiencing in their day-to-day lives. So to me, it's my responsibility as a facilitator to make sure that we are being as accommodating as possible, that we are being as adaptive as possible, both for people's needs, but also for the reality of some meetings. I just call them grieving sessions. You know, sometimes things just are at a certain point where it's like, we just need to grieve for a bit and recognize and see each other and have the staff from the city be a part of that process and be able to see with us. And I think that's really where a lot actually the transformation is happening, is where when we are able to be human and be fully ourselves and where staff are able to be human and fully themselves, that really allows for that transformation right. to come forward.
Having that formality barrier between staff and the public
yeah.
doesn't get the ideas across necessarily. But I think there's some inhibitions that people have, you know, talking to these formal planning groups, you know, the staff, the councillors. It's scary, you know, for your average citizen to go up there and delegate to council is a daunting task.
Mm-hmm. It very much is. And one of the biggest barriers we hit is that staff and councillors themselves feel so overwhelmed by all the pressures and logistics. And they and so part of our work is helping them see that the community understands that. Like, even your most militant advocate understands that you as a city staff or you as a city councilor are juggling a lot, and they want you to be honest with them about what you're juggling so that they can find a way to make sure that what you are juggling is not violating human rights, like that human rights are part of that table. And that's really where it's only through that transformative, like, human first approach that we're able to help those people in positions of power feel safe enough to take off some of that load so that we can put on the reality that human rights should be centered in all things. And we can only do that through human work, collaboration, and listening.
Right. When you're presenting to council or even to the planning department, has it been pushed back on some of the ideas that you've presented?
I mean, they're definitely, with the staff we've been working with, I feel like we've had some really, really great understanding. But I mean, it was very public. You can all watch the June council meeting. There were definitely some councillors who who were, I think, holding on to a lot of pressure from the community. I mean, let's not lie, homelessness is a very hot issue. It's contentious. People have a lot of feelings about it. And then that pressure gets dumped onto counselors. And so I think, you know, I think you can see that in some of the questions counselors are raising, and just, you know, they are trying to navigate a complicated situation, and our role is to remind them about human rights. And sometimes that puts them in a very difficult position. And I think we have seen pushback from just, I think, the level of pressure that they are experiencing.
It was actually the June council meeting that I was specifically thinking of.
Yes.
And I asked the question, what happened there? Can you recap the goings on of the June council meeting?
I mean, it was a very interesting experience because we had a lot of alignments with the city as we went into that meeting. That's why we collaborated with the planning department on a presentation. We had planning department, there was myself, there were some of the lived experts, sharing kind of just like, we had, these are what we learned from the year one. And so it was a bit surprising then when there was a few counselors who had just some really intense concerns about talking about human rights. And I mean, Mayor Barry was very right to remind council that the Housing for All strategy does commit the city to a human rights-based approach. And so what we as lived expertise working group is trying to help them understand that. But that doesn't mean each counselor has an intimate understanding of what a human rights-based approach is. And what they do understand is that the Social Development Center has been very vocal about human rights violations, in particular with regards to the island that was the encampment that was in Willow River Park. So I understand, like, I mean, it was shocking for me.
you were the target
there. I was the target of a lot of questions. It was not a fun place to be in. I have empathy for where it was coming from, but I, you know, and this is why bridging is so important, right? Because clearly those counselors were holding some pressures that I didn't understand, and they need to help me understand what those pressures are. Mm-hmm. And clearly they didn't understand what a human rights-based approach is, and that's where my role is to help them understand. So we've had lots of conversations with folks at the city this summer to try and do that bridging work, and we hope this charter will help. And I mean, to the city's credit, this is real nitty-gritty kind of stuff, but one of the challenges when the city created the lived expertise working group and we're like, here, go work on the affordable housing strategy, that they did that right at the turning point when all of a sudden the scale of homelessness became so much on the city's workload that it just kind of completely changed what then the scope of work would be. Like, we had, the working group was intended to work on the affordable housing strategy, but city staff had to spend all their time responding to encampments and did not have the tools to do so. And so that really created a lot of scope confusion.
Yeah.
And so I understand whenever there's scope confusion, right, it makes it possible for that kind of tension to happen. This is why with this new charter, we're very clearly, it says, you know, the working group's going to work on the official plan. We're going to work on rental housing and eviction and displacement studies. We're working to work on the Housing for All strategy implementation, housing needs assessment. There's some very clear projects, and I think that will give counselors a little bit of peace of mind to know that there is something it's much more concrete than it was when we were in the scale, when they were completely overwhelmed, their staff were completely overwhelmed and didn't have the tools to navigate. So we're in a different place too.
Good. Yeah, because when the questions were directed at you, I got the impression that the counselors were hurt by some of the criticisms that either the lived experience working group or the Social Development Center had raised about what council had done or what council was planning. And I feared that your funding would be pulled for criticizing the hand that fed you.
I mean, we definitely were afraid too. To be clear, like, and this is one another part of the confusion, is like the lived expertise working group had nothing to do with the public letter that we wrote. Like, it was the Social Development Center that wrote that letter with Community Legal Services. It was not the lived expertise working group. But obviously, I can understand where confusion can amount when I'm working at the Social Development Center, but I'm also facilitating the lived expertise working group. And I can see where it comes from. Doesn't mean it was appropriate. And I told them so in the meeting, that maybe this is stuff we could talk about through some more meetings, have some more conversations to really clarify things. And that's what we've attempted to do this summer. Right. But yeah, it definitely was a fear on our mind.
Yeah. The funding that comes is lived expertise working group entirely funded from the city of Kitchener?
Kinda. So the city covers the costs of meetings, so stipends and like refreshments and stuff like that.
Okay.
But my role as facilitator, that's entirely funded by the Social Development Center.
Okay.
We previously were working with the Canadian Housing Transformation Center to support that work, but now it is the Social Development Center. Is like, so you can see it's like a jointly funded project,
right?
Half by the city and half by the Social Development Center.
Right. I know that funding is always difficult to come by, and it's become increasingly scarce over the last few years.
Yeah.
So,
but just like for everyone's like, for people who want to know what the funding is, so like the city has committed to $30,000 a year for this work. And so for anyone who's ever written a grant, or, you know, if like you know what your salary is, that's like, that's really not a lot of funding that we're talking about here. And so I believe that no matter what happens, there'll be ways for us to find funding for this kind of work moving forward.
Good, good. And of course, donations are always gratefully accepted.
Yeah, actually, the Social Development Center, we're participating in the Ride for Refuge this Saturday.
Oh, yes.
So cool. For folks who like to walk, run, or just donate, Ride for Refuge, rideforrefuge, I think, .ca or whatever, that's where we'll be. And next Saturday, we will be walking and riding through the community.
Okay, and that's taking place. The launch point is the Social Development Center.
Yes, just come to our office. I think the walk and ride start at 11, so come before then. Yeah, I'm sure we can even do day of registrations if you want. And please donate. Like, the Social Development Center is very uniquely positioned in the type of advocacy we do. Most other agencies have lots of constraints on what advocacy they do, and so then there isn't loud, strong voices in the community outside of the Social Development Center and community legal services who are making sure human rights are being followed, making sure this kind of deep, long engagement with the city and now the region is happening. So if you think that's valuable, please lend us a dollar or two, and let's keep making this community a one full of human rights.
You have some pithy quotes in the report that's coming out that you want to share?
The report is more kind of like, these are our common agreements. So, for example, we talk about the counselors didn't know what a human rights-based approach. So we're like, the human rights-based approach we take declares that everyone has the right to permanent and adequate housing. And this is stuff that's been committed to by many levels of government, but it's in the application where it gets missed up. Okay. And so we're hoping that by trying to draw that out, we can help the city and city councilors really understand what they're committing to.
So it's really actually more of a putting it down on paper in a formal report so that it can be referred to in other documents.
It's like a common fount of understanding.
Okay.
Because we don't want any more miscommunication, misunderstandings, stuff like that.
So no radical new ideas.
Oh, there's always radical new ideas. Right. Like every, I mean, even just to be at a place where we were collaborating on a report like this, right? And to be at a place where the city is now putting it, like making itself accountable to this type of, like there's eight principles here about lived expertise engagement around the value of bridges, the value of stipend, like paid work, the value of navigating through conflict. Like these, there's all these really important pillars. And you know, if the city's committing to that in writing, which we think is very valuable, so that not only us as a lived expertise group, but there are so many other areas of advocacy for many other different communities experiencing marginalization, and we want to be a pillar that they can follow in making sure that
right.
The city is following through on these kind of principles of engagement.
Other human rights,
like
equality, justice, and
we have seen a lot of, let's say, change at the city's equity office. And so we think it's very valuable for groups and community members who care about equity work to be checking out this report and to be supporting us and the equity staff to make sure that the city is transforming at its full potential, which we truly believe it can.
Okay. And that's going to spill over into all other sorts of human rights areas that the city has some investment in.
We really hope so. And you all can help by letting counselors know that you care about this work, you know, letting counselors know that you value this type of engagement and that you want to keep seeing it happen.
Okay. I think we want to play another song.
Sure.
A song you might recognize. This is Jillian, My Eye the Mountain. Oh,
I'll get my dancing shoes on.
I don't mind that you call me all the time. Honey, that's alright. It's just every time you don't. Oh, I don't get no sleep at night.
see that pretty face every place I stare. It's just every time I don't. Oh, I don't get no sleep at night. Sweet, sweet Jillian, you're killing everything just the way you lie across that floor. You blow me over, got me running from cover every time you knock, knock, knocking at my door. And bless these tired eyes, I'll never get no sleep at night. Like I'm hiding from myself. You pretend that you don't know.
You keep me up at night.
Sweet, sweet Jillian, you're killing everything just the way you ride across that floor. You blow me over, got me running for cover every time.
No, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a fun day.
David Alton was one of the guest singers. Is that the way to...
Yeah, you can say we were there to mug and sing and dance.
Yeah, I had Idle Mountain in a few weeks back, and they said that it was somewhat spontaneous where you were at, because they were expecting to be all over the city at various art locations, and did the whole thing on Cockle Street.
Yeah, it was just a really lovely day, and I mean, the city's done a really good job at taking literally one of the ugliest parts of the city, like the whole Charles Street area full of parking lots and the abandoned bus station, and making it something pretty and a place for the community to gather.
Yeah. How did you get approached by Eye of the Mountain?
So my lovely partner, Ashay Dalvi, is involved with...
That was your partner in...
Yes, oh, yes, that was my actual partner. I wasn't acting in love, that was me actually... with my hearts in my eyes. But my partner Ashay is a volunteer with Midtown Radio.
Okay.
And then Allison and Jay from Midtown Radio are in Eye of the Mountain. And so that's kind of how we got looped in. And it was a fun day, because it was just like, oh, all the people who were there were like, oh, I know you from there and you from there and you from there. It was a nice little... coming together of the local queer community.
Yeah, it's such a joyful thing. I think that's my song for the summer.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad.
Yeah. Other work that you're doing. You're a member of Ground Up WR. You're one of the founders of Ground Up WR, as I recall.
What's
that all about?
Well, I think it's really apt that you play Jillian. You know, because from my conversations with Allison and Matt about why they were like wanted to do the why they wanted us in the song, why they wanted to platform local queer people, is because of the growing movement that's really trying to remove queer life from the school board. And so, for anyone who's been following the school board, our local school boards, the public, the Catholic, and even the French, have been really hot lately with this movement of folks who just really do not want queer life to be free in schools. They are also targeting content led by like famous black authors like Toni Morrison. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, it's around this idea of, do children actually have autonomy? They call themselves the parents' rights movement. And it's this idea that parents have rights over their children, which fundamentally then is eliminating the rights of children themselves. Oh,
sounds more like a property right.
Yes, exactly. Children right. Not yeah. Property. So GroundUp has been on that for over a year now. I mean, this movement's getting spicier across the continent. And Wednesday is a national day of action for this parents' rights movement. And so they're actually holding a parents' rights rally at the city hall on Wednesday. And so folks in the queer community, folks in many of the black, indigenous, racialized communities are very concerned. We know that the labor board and teachers unions are very concerned. So there's GroundUp's helping enable a drag defense or a queer defense that day, where mm-hmm. we're making sure that youth who are in our school system, youth who are within families that are not fully safe still, know that there are people in their community who are here to affirm their right to exist freely and to bring out the joy of life that comes from living freely. And so I encourage anyone who's listening, if you want to see our schools places where children continue to thrive, and if you want to help us see an end of this movement that's constantly kind of constrict and control, that's deeply transphobic, queerphobic, that's deeply racist, that's deeply anti-black racist, mm-hmm. I encourage you to think about coming out Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. to City Hall of Kitchener and join us in trying to create space between this harmful movement and the rest of our community.
Right.
And we'll be there to teach you about what does it look like to do community safety. I mean, for folks who've been following the kind of the local abolitionist movement, and people are like, well, how do we keep safe? I'm like, this is how we keep you safe. We keep safe by showing up with each other,
right.
By practicing safety, by practicing, you know, standing up for each other. This is what real safety looks like. And so would love for you all to come out and join us. And for folks who can't make it out or who want an extra help, Tuesday night, actually in this building at the Spectrum office, they are making signs for the rally from 3 to 6. To 6 on Tuesday, tomorrow, or Tuesday, you can come make signs to help out with the rally.
At Spectrum here in the Duke Street Beamer Box building.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. Second floor, nice space, an expanded space recently. Yeah, I saw that the meeting room that we had been using is now a Spectrum auxiliary office.
Oh, wonderful.
So, yeah, it's great. And so that's going on at 3 p.m. on Tuesday.
The sign making is 3 p.m. on Tuesday, and then the rally itself is 9 a.m. on Wednesday morning.
In front of City Hall in Kitchener.
And if you have never done this kind of rally before, or if you have questions about safety, about what is it, how do I stand up, just go to GroundUp's social media on Instagram or Twitter, or I mean, there's a huge, like, there's this is these are national movements now, so we're collaborating with people across the country on how do we help people stand up, how do we help people take that next step to make sure that their neighbors and their community members are free.
Yeah, because you're going to end up losing some of your community spaces if we don't stand up for the rights to be able to use them.
100%.
I'm seeing as well is that it's happening in libraries as well as schools.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, so. We had one of these kind of queer defenses earlier this summer because people were threatening to shut down a drag time story hour at the Kitchener Public Library.
Really?
So we got a bunch of people out to just be on the street, create a rainbow carpet for any youth who wanted to go to the library that day, and just to help show each other that we have each other's back.
Right, right. That's largely being driven by GroundUp.
GroundUp's always a great place to start. I mean, we are connected with so many other partners. We know that the labor union is going to be there. There's the university's solidarity network is going to be there. We work with so many different community members. Our role as GroundUp is always to try and be like, how do we fill the gap, and how do we be very the kind of that first place to how, what's the first step I take? How do I get involved? I care. I hear so much about this on the news, and now it's coming to my community. What do I do? Ground Up's a great place to go just to learn and have that first step. And we can connect. You can be part of our network, or you can connect with so many of our colleagues across the country.
And so to get started, the idea is to just show up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else that's happening in the community that either is directly related to the Lived Expertise Working Group or other movements that you're involved in?
I encourage people right now to be paying just very closely attention to what's going on in housing and homelessness. Winter is coming. We saw that the region unfortunately closed the 150 Main encampment, and we know that the 100 Victoria encampment's facing lots of pressure. And we know that there's many people who are being pushed into more and more dangerous spaces. And especially with winter, people make some really, really tough decisions about winter. And so how people can get involved is, one, just be keeping it on your mind, paying attention, following the news. You can follow what's going on with the Planned In Chronic Homelessness. You can follow organizations like the Unsheltered Campaign, or even really valuable local agencies like Aqua or Sanguin, to just be listening to where is help needed most. And we want to make sure that homelessness is on people's top of mind as we enter into winter.
Right. I'll have some of those links to those agencies and social support sites on the show notes for today. That's radiowaterloo.ca/CCC, and hope to have those up hopefully before Wednesday morning, so that people can actually reference that and make it out to City Hall. What else is happening with the Lived Experience Group? So you'll be sending your report to council on Tuesday, you said?
Monday. It'll be Monday. We'll be going to council. And then after that, we have a big slate of work to do. And we're also sending several of our members to the National Canadian Alliance to End Homelessness Conference in November. For folks who value that kind of work and want to see those voices, you can definitely follow up our updates from that, or you can even be a donor, connect with the Social Development Center and be like, I want to donate to the Lived Expertise Working Group.
And you can direct the donations that you make.
Yeah, you can just let the SCC know you want to support the Lived Expertise Working Group, and you can help send another member to the conference, make sure that this project can continue thriving.
Right, where's this taking place?
The conference is in Halifax this year, which is a really interesting city for encampments, as it's been had several encampment clearings, but there's also been some really strong voices for a human rights-based approach as well. So we're going right to kind of ground zero for some important homelessness conversations.
Right. Nova Scotia has another conservative provincial government at the moment, so they have the challenges, I'm sure.
Yes, the provinces always make lots of challenges, and then the municipalities are learning how to take leadership, which I think is important that we empower them to take as much leadership as they can.
All politics is local, and that's where you can make the biggest difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so that's from the future stuff that Lived Expertise Group is doing. What sort of involvement can people have if they want to help out? If somebody is out there who believes that they may have some expertise to offer, how can they get involved?
Yeah, if you are wanting to get involved in many spaces, or already involved and want some more support in, for example, bridging or connecting with institutions or doing a human rights-based approach, I would say the best place to connect with the Social Development Center that we have. If you go to our website, you'll see there's the Civic Hub, which is just full of grassroots groups who are doing all sorts of amazing places, amazing things. So there's lots of options for places to get started, or you yourself can join the Civic Hub if you are, you know, a fledgling grassroots group and you want to get connected with others and collaborate more. So that's the Civic Hub,
civichubwr.org on the web.
Yeah.
And there should be contact information on there. And then the Social Development Center itself is waterlooregion.org on the web. So I guess there's contact information there as well. There's actually a Lived Expertise page.
Yes, I need to update it more, but yes, I will make sure it's nice and shiny for you all.
Have a quick look at that now. If you're watching us on YouTube Live, you can see the Lived Expertise Working Group, which has a couple of pictures at the top there. It looks like you're...
Yeah, we just did a gallery at the library, and if you are folks who have gallery space and are interested in exhibiting the work of the Lived Expertise Working Group, feel free to contact me at David kitchener.alton@waterlooregion.org, and I'm happy to have some conversations about that really amazing exhibit that the working group created.
Right. That was a one-day event, though, mm-hmm. so that's... Didn't last particularly long.
Well, it was a Blitz fundraiser for the conference, that's why.
Oh, I see.
So we were raising money to send folks to the conference, that's why it was a one-day folk thing. But it was a really wonderful night, and we would love to do more stuff like that. So if those are things that you are passionate about, you just email me and let me know.
Okay. Have David's email up on the show notes as well. Thank you, David Alton, for coming into CKMS Community Connections. It's been wonderful having you in. Sorry to make you run.
Oh, I mean, it was my pleasure. I should have been here ages ago, so I'm happy to do my part.
Yeah. CKMS Community Connections is a production of Radio Waterloo. Its executive producer is Jennifer Strong. Associate producer is Jeff Steger. Theme music is by Stephen Todd. My name is Bob Jonkman. David Alton's been in the studio with us from the Lived Expertise Working Group. CKMS Community Connections airs every Monday at 11 o'clock and alternate Fridays at 3 p.m.